Welcome to podcast number 42 of Open Foil. This is a very special one because it's live and it's super exciting for me. Yeah. I'm a bit nervous.
I can touch him.
I'm a bit nervous actually. And we are here with Catherine Cola, which is amazing. She's a pump foiler. And you used to be, or you still are, a choreographer and a dancer. And I want to touch on that for sure. I'm super interested. And you want to try to get more women into foiling. And that's super interesting and also not easy, I suppose. And we're going to talk about that. But first, I want to ask you, is there anything that you want to just add right away?
Well, there is another side of me that I'm an economist. I studied economics and I've been a business consultant. And I'm a very brainy person from that side.
Okay.
Studied econometrics. So numbers and stuff is my thing as well. Not only the body.
Okay. Is that helpful for pump foiling? Or is it more no. The contrary?
I do maybe pump foiling to get to turn out my head. It's a good method to get out of the head into the body and to use the knowledge of the body.
How do you do that?
As soon as I think about something, when I do pump foiling, I fall into the water. So I'm forced to stop thinking.
That's a good thing. That's a good thing. But that's also not easy, I suppose. Did you have to like learn that, adapt to that?
Yes. It's a lot of training and it took me a long time to learn pump foiling. There was more falling in the beginning.
Well, that's usually with everyone, really.
It
was that
took
more
me
with
longer.
You?
Yes, I think so. It was not only my head, I think that was in the way. It was also a gear topic.
Okay.
And also, yes, it was a question of age.
How old are you?
I am. You didn't ask whether you're there.
Well, you don't have to
no,
talk about it.
No, you can
it.
Ask,
that's
of
fine,
course.
Because
no.
I think it's important as well.
No, I'm 54. When I started, I was 51. No, 50. Yeah, 51. Yes, I was 51.
Okay.
And this is the age where women are usually getting into menopause. And this is something very strange. No one prepares you for that. We are starting to talk about it all the time now. But I think it's even more changing your body and life maybe than puberty, and not to the better, not in all aspects. So this is very unexpected for a lot of us women, and that's why I address it, because also we don't know about it and the men don't know about it. I think we have to address this topic, and also men go through something similar. So this is when some changes happen to you in your body when you're around 50, this is normal. And if you feel like you're in puberty again, this is probably normal.
I'm looking forward to hit puberty, to be honest.
I thought you were hoping for to leave it.
Well, I'm not sure. Everyone else is probably hoping for me to leave it. But
Now, the problem about this is really that you don't build up any muscles anymore.
Yeah.
And so I was training every day, or I did some sports every day, and coming from my sportive background, all of a sudden not to build up muscles and to lose them, actually. This was unexpected and I didn't know where it came from. And I was always exhausted. That was the other thing. I could sleep well. I didn't have any transpiration problems, nothing of that. So I didn't even know I'm there.
Okay.
So, but let's stop this topic. I think we've talked about it a lot.
All right. That's up to you, because I think it's super interesting. Well, you said that you lost some muscle.
Yeah.
You did a lot of sports. I said it in the intro that you used to be a dancer. Like what kind of dancer? How should we imagine you on stage?
Well, I've danced since I'm 5 years old. I started with classical ballet. I did tap dance, I did flamenco dance, I did buto dance, I did any sort of dance you can imagine, I think, because I like to try new stuff. And so my professional dance career, I mainly spent in the Bavarian State Opera in Munich, and working a lot with opera as well. So this is from the performing arts, more than just the dance work.
So how should I imagine that? Like having a show every night, every other night, or how does that work?
It could happen. It's I was production specific engaged, but I did a lot of productions, so I could have like 5 to 6 productions in one season, and every production has about 6 to 8 performances, so this is spent over the whole season, so it's quite a regular topic. And I studied economics at the side of this, so this was my I used to live 2 lives at the same time.
Okay.
And I think I do that as well now.
Yeah, we're going to get into it. I just want to stay on that topic because it's very special. I didn't know much about that. I have friends who are actors, so they train or they practice mm-hmm. a lot and then they have their sessions. But for you, you must have trained a lot even outside of a certain project.
Yes.
What were your training? What was the routine like?
Well, I went to dance classes usually in the morning, very often 8 o'clock in the morning. And then, of course, when we had rehearsals, there's always a class in the morning to, or before the rehearsals, also before the shows, of course, we do a warm-up. So this was something very special for me when I came to the Pamfoy world and I saw the people getting dressed in the neoprene, and I jumped immediately on the board. And I, also, when I had took my first lesson, I was like, no warm-up? I mean, you think I should just jump on this thing right now without
preparation?
Well, putting
on the wetsuit is super exhausting already, so that's a good warm-up. What do you think?
Well, you know, my first lesson was, I think, the 16th of April. Water was 9 degrees cold.
Okay,
it was
an
Easter Sunday, 9 o'clock morning, but the sun was shining, and I didn't have a neoprene because I'm claustrophobic, so I tried to avoid neoprenes. And I had a 2 millimeter shorty, and slippers, and a bath cap. But I wanted to definitely try this thing. And I said, I do it in this outfit. And I did 10 jumps. I think the water was 9 degrees, yeah.
Wow, that is impressive. So let's just start with like your first session. You must have seen all the Zurich crew. Who was there? Zeno was there?
Well, there was Sinus there, Sarah, I saw, she was a woman. So that was very important for me, that there was a woman as well. There were not many at that time. I think there was maybe a handful of people.
Well, 2 or 3 years ago, he said.
3 years ago, yeah. So it was really the start. And but when I was included in the group, I saw that there is more women, and there were a lot of female names, but I didn't see them. And I didn't read them because they didn't post. So this is we're not so active in the chat groups. But I knew they exist.
Yeah.
So.
And then you saw the guys and I don't know, and the girls, how good were they at the time? Were they all like pumping around, making like 1 minute rounds, or it's like more trying to start and maybe a few pumps?
I think we were all about starting and doing the first pumps. I think Zeno was really one of the advanced, and Philip and Sarah, I think those are the ones I knew that were advanced, but I'm not sure whether they had their minute already.
Okay.
I think it might have been just before, and was also just starting this minute challenge of the Wake Thief.
Super cool challenge. And also, it was a lot harder with the gear that was there. It is easier now than it was back then. But then you saw them like jumping on their board, falling often, I imagine, maybe doing a few pumps. Was that appealing for you? Because it looks, honestly, I think pump foiling is not super aesthetic. I think it looks quite dumb. You don't agree with me?
It depends on who you're looking at.
Well, if I look at myself, it doesn't look super good. Also, the other ones, like I have a shot when the guys from Code were here, and we have a shot of like 7 people pumping at the same time, and everyone is like just bouncing. I think it looks quite stupid, honestly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is a super amazing feeling, obviously. Mm-hmm. But it looks weird.
Yeah.
But it was appealing for you anyway. It was for me too. But what was the appeal? What was?
I think, you know, when you, especially as a dancer or as a body worker, you can say, you when you see someone moving, your mirror neurons are activated and you feel it in your body immediately.
Okay.
So just by looking at it, you feel it in your body, and. So I just wanted to do this. I think I had started to do butterfly swimming 2 years before. That was something, because just swimming was so boring for me. And so I started the butterfly. And then after that, I felt, okay, what do I do next in the water? Because I love the water and I live next to the water. So I started to do winter swimming. That's why the cold is something I appreciate actually now.
Oh, okay.
It's really, really cool to do it. Very refreshing also for your mind. It's not only the body refreshment. And then I could do this and then I asked myself, so what's next?
Okay.
And also I had to find a new sport because I had broken my ankle and I was looking for a new sport that I could do regularly.
All right. And then you saw those guys from Apple. Just a quick shout out to Vesna and Mirko. Hi, into the internet. Cool that you're here. Let's talk about gear, because we said it was difficult back then. What gear did they use? What gear did you use? You said before, like last week when we met, that you use a lot of different foils. Which one did you start with? What are you using now?
Yeah. I started with, like, I think everyone started with that in Zurich. It was the 1100 PP from Indiana.
Yeah.
That was the foil at the moment and the only one that I could see and try.
Yeah.
So I started with that one, also with the red and white board.
Yeah.
And the small version, I think there was a bigger, longer version already, but I had the 1 meter about version. And I think it was very good because it was very stable and it was somehow waiting there for me in the water. The problem was that I could jump on it, but then I didn't manage to move it.
Okay.
And every jump gave me a shock through the whole body because it's quite stiff, it's very rigid, it's very stable.
It's good, but yeah.
It's good, but it's also, it's like a concrete floor. When you jump on concrete floor, you know, it's not so good for your body.
Mm-hmm.
And also it was very heavy to lift out of the water. Yeah, and that's what you do in the beginning all the time. Yeah. So I got inflammations in my shoulders. I got inflammations in my hips.
Okay.
I got inflammations almost everywhere in my body. This was not only due to the heavy material, but also to the menopause because inflammations also come with it. And problems in the joints.
Yeah.
So you get a lot of aches in the pain in the joints. And but then the thing was really, I could do some pumps, but somehow I couldn't move it on.
Yeah.
And that was, now I would say, I didn't have the muscles, didn't have the force to move it. I was too light and not equipped with sufficient muscle.
Okay.
So, because everyone said, oh yes, Sarah, she can pump it. When we talk about Sarah, it's Sarah Butterfly, Sarah Spalinger. And I once asked her, she said, I don't think I can pump it anymore. I don't know whether she tried again. But this was, she could do it and she can do amazing things.
Yeah.
She can do things a lot of people cannot do, no matter which sex, age or whatever, you know. She's amazing. And but everyone said, oh yeah, she can do it, so you should do it as well. And I couldn't. And so it took really a long time. And what I learned now as well is I doubted myself.
Yeah.
You know, this was really the thing. I doubted I can't do it. I do something wrong. And
sorry to interject. Mm-hmm. Is that a women's thing? Maybe as well.
I realized once we had a get together, a meeting for a lunch meetup, and the man always said, "Oh yeah, I jumped on this, and then it didn't work out, and I changed this at the material, and then I changed the mast, and then I changed the board," and I was like, "Ah, I never thought about changing material. I always thought I'm the wrong."
Yeah.
And it might be that this is something. It's our socialization.
Probably.
You know.
Yeah.
You say, I can do it, I can do it. You grew up, I can do it somehow.
Yeah.
So I just have to change conditions so that I can do it.
Yeah.
And we are grown up, we adapt to the conditions. It's like when we cannot do it, it's our fault.
Okay.
We adapt to the conditions and not the addition conditions to us. You know, we get very stereotyped. I don't like this very much because there is always...
But there's some truth to it.
But this is, I think, something we learn to adapt and behave.
And when I look at this, like, first foil, pretty low aspect, and the stabs were huge back then.
Oh, yes.
So that's even harder to pump, like the big stabs. So when I switched from a small one to a big one again, it's like, oh, like going through butter. It's so exhausting as well. So Yeah, smallish tab would have helped. But then you pumped, I saw you on Cloud, I saw you on like a Clubber once, and you also had like Keto Sport. Like, what happened then?
Oh, let me finish one thing with the gear. One mistake, big mistake I made as well. I jumped on the board and I tried to bend the knees. No one could tell me about the movement. So everyone could explain me almost all about the material, not really about the physics of the material, and but no one could tell me about the movement. And this was really the thing. I said, okay, this is my topic then. I tried to do movement research and to find out what is the pumping movement. I said, yeah, just you bend your knees, and it's not. It's not just bending knees. And especially it's not bending your upper body, which I did a lot.
It's also not flapping the arms around.
It's not flapping the arms around. It might help. It might destroy your pumping. It's really, it's a different movement, and the source of the movement doesn't come from the upper body.
Yeah.
So that's just having said this, and about the gear, I met one morning there was this message in the chat group about and I read the name very quickly, and there was someone from Geneva coming called Yvonne, and I thought, oh great, this is a lady finally, and I told her where to buy the croissants, and I said, okay, I will be at the dock later on, and then I came to the dock and I said, okay, where is the lady? And then there was Yvonne.
is it Yvonne, not Yvonne? Oh, that's funny. That's funny.
And he was a good lady as well. He was a fun person to do the pumping. And he and also another colleague of mine, Julien Kilchenmann, who is a cello player, also an artist. That means something. I think it helps to be an artist to do this.
Okay. Be more sensible or what?
We are used to work on fine iterations in the body.
Okay.
And very fine, we have to feel and to, we listen and feel fine iterations in the whole surrounding and also in the body. So this is what helps, I think.
Yeah,
and the
definitely.
Learning journey. We have all gone through a learning journey. For one little movement, we exercise many, many weeks and years. So we are used to that, I think.
Okay.
But Julien and Yvonne, they said, please try another foil, because this is not a... They really had a hard time talking me over.
Yeah.
And of course, I jumped on something and it was like, whew, gone before I could really put my feet on it. It was too fast.
Yeah.
And also I did the low start, so I had to jump from a low dock up to the board.
Okay.
So
also not helpful. And we have Vesna here, who just asked, how did you jump on the board at the beginning? Like, what was the start? Like you said, you had a low dog, you had the board higher up, jumping on the board like that is super difficult.
Yes, it's that's how I learned it. I mean, I think the first two times Zeno held the board for me.
Yeah.
And I did like 1, 2, 3 jump, three steps and jump, and without any explanation. And of course I fell.
Obviously.
And then he soon gave me the board to push it myself.
Yeah.
And so I pushed it, like many still do it when they do a running start. I didn't do a running start. I didn't use any steps because we didn't have the docks to really do that.
So it depends so much on the dog.
I had to push the board, and I'm a goofy, so I jumped actually from the right foot, and then I jumped on the on both foot at the same time.
Okay.
I tried to.
But you pushed it and then let it go and then jumped on it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, because otherwise you have to run, I think.
Yeah.
And also I trained a lot at the dock, which is almost on water level at Erlenbach, it's called.
Yeah.
And I rented a board there because there's a shop right next door. And that's where I met Karl from Cloud9.
Okay.
He was there on holidays with his family, and he looked at me and I was just falling in the water. I could push it and stand up and sink with it.
That's already a big step.
So I could do this.
The salute. Because that's a big step already.
And now I'm so proud of it. I couldn't do it anymore now because I cannot jump up anymore. And then this guy asked me, oh yes, can you rent this somewhere here? And I said, yeah, up there. But it's really, really hard. You know, you have to expect you only fall in the water when you rent it now. And he said, okay. And then he came back with the board and the foil, and he pushed it in the water, he jumped on it and pumped. And I was like, I had made a fool of myself, you know, explaining him how difficult it is. And then later on, he explained to me he is a brand owner of Cloud9.
That's funny that he explained it afterwards.
Yeah. I hope Carl is fine that I tell everyone this story. But so we are really connected from my beginning on.
Yeah.
And much later on, it was really Yvonne who told me that there is people pumping Cloud9 in Geneva.
Yeah.
And then I asked the people whether they could come to Zurich to do a test event, and which they did. And I jumped on it and I pumped so easily. It was really the first jump and it was mine.
And then what happened? Cloud. Were you able to glide for longer or actually pump and like steer?
Actually, I had jumping back and forth. In between, I had an access setup.
Okay.
In between. So I definitely changed after I had met Yvonne and Julien. Also, he was talking a lot to me. Julien is not riding access. He was on subfoil, I think, at the moment. Yvonne, he consulted me, recommended some access gear. Yeah.
Which one was it?
It was the old P&G 1300.
Yeah.
And with a 80 centimeter mast. And the stabilizer, I think, was a 65.
All right. Yeah.
And
still good stuff.
Yes, it's still very good. Yeah. And I kept my board, and then I fell in love with the prototype of Yvonne's Ketos board,
yeah,
which was 1 meter and 7 centimeters. And I definitely wanted to have a board like that, but it was a bit too long.
Yeah.
But then I said, yeah, they might produce it a bit shorter, but I would have to wait 2 or 3 months because they are just prototyping it. And I said, I can't wait that long. So I got this 1 meter 7 board, and it has a dolphin on.
Yeah.
It was Yvonne who asked me one day, what kind of animal would you like to be? And I said, dolphin. And since then I'm Katrin Dolphin,
right,
and I put the dolphin on my board. And I just received today, finally, the short 90 centimeter version of my dolphin board.
Nice.
It's a new dolphin board, yeah. I haven't tested it yet today. Oh. I didn't have the time, but I came today.
So you came here to talk with me,
yes,
to you guys, instead of going for a pump with your Uber One.
Yes.
Thank you so much. That is pretty something.
It means something.
Yeah,
it means something.
Definitely.
Exactly.
But you unpacked it.
I unpacked it. I looked at it because I didn't know about the design. You know, Ketos is doing customized design,
yeah,
well, to a certain extent. And I asked for another dolphin on,
yeah,
it. And I let it open where they place it.
Yeah. But which dolphin it was? The same?
It was, I think, it's the same design, okay, yeah. But you will see. I will show you soon.
Nice, nice.
And
cool.
I will test hopefully soon. So that was the gear in between.
Yes.
And I could start pumping with that. I came up to about 40 seconds,
yeah,
maybe. And it was hard, hard work still.
Yeah.
And then I jumped on the Cloud9 and life was easy. Life was so easy. The gear is so light.
Yeah.
It weighs almost nothing.
Oh, that's good for lifting.
And I could regulate the. It has a stabilizer where you can regulate the length of the fuselage.
Cool.
Really cool. And and also the front wing. It's the FS 1780. It's called.
That's the span
it's,
or the
it's
area.
The area.
Okay.
Is the area, and. It's quite big, but it's very turny.
Yeah.
It has a very special design. It was not intended for pump foiling.
Okay.
But it's, I have to say, I'm not paid by Cloud9. I didn't get my gear for free. But it's one of the best foils I've ever used.
Yeah.
And also the mast, they developed a new mast, which I also bought then later on. And it's the lightest and the most versatile gear you can use for many, many years. I still enjoy it, even the competitions I did with it. I put a very little stabilizer on it.
Yeah.
And, do you hear me, Carl? I always tell him, please produce a smaller foil for more advanced people so that we can go faster.
All right.
So this is Indiana Axis Cloud9. Then I went back to Axis because the Cloud9 was going too slow for me a bit. And I tried also, I started to try a lot of stuff, because what the Cloud9 does, it gives you a pumping technique that is very clean. If you don't
pump, is it because it's more difficult?
It's not really more difficult. You have to pump evenly.
Okay.
You really have to, you cannot use force. Force won't help you in that case. And this is not helping either. It will sink immediately.
Okay.
So you really have to find the right spot and to pump evenly and
efficiently.
Yeah. It helped me to develop the technique. And since I can pump the Cloud9, I could pump almost everything. I tried everything. I jumped on Ketos foils, I jumped on Code foils, subfoils, AFS, Indiana, also the new Indiana Condor, the M and the S, And this is also something that trained me a lot.
Yeah.
And it's lots of fun to get this feeling, you know. You jump on it, sometimes you immediately can go.
Yeah.
Crazy. Sometimes you fall, but then you
that's pretty quickly.
how you learn also, you know, you learn how to feel.
I totally agree. I think the more different foils you use, the more proficient you get, because you can adapt faster. And maybe you start and then you fall, but as soon as you're on board and you start falling, you say, all right, I should have gone a little more to the back or something like that, and then next or maybe two times after, you're ready to go. And that's, I think, is really cool. And I also enjoy it very much. Like, going on another foil, super interesting. And also, I don't know what it is, but if I cannot start something, I will not let it go until it works.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's competitive, it's like, I want to like, conquer the foil, even if it's difficult.
Yeah.
Or a stab, something like that. So that's what I enjoy a lot.
Yeah, when I learned that it's not always my fault, it can be the fault of the gear, I prefer to use gear that I can ride easily.
Well, that suits
I don't have to work too hard for. And something that also helped me a lot was not the gear, it was the change of the starting technique and to learn different starting techniques. So I think it's a specialty. I think I'm known for testing a lot.
Yeah.
I'm known for my skirts. I'm known for my blue carriage, because I don't have a car, so I go everywhere with public transport. And I'm known for the different starting techniques, I think.
Tell me about it.
And unfortunately, I can't do the running start. I can't start low, not at all anymore.
Okay.
This is a big problem, especially in competitive moments.
Yeah.
And so I always feel the higher.
What is the problem though? Is it because like going down holding the board lower or what is it?
Yeah, I think maybe I'm too lazy to.
That's good.
To do this hard job of going from very low to high up and to use a lot of energy, I think my body might not be able to do it. I don't know. I think I could train the body again to do it. But it's somehow, it's not my thing.
Okay.
It's not my movement. And also when I started to use smaller foils, this is really hard.
Without
running, it's almost impossible. I see also you guys fighting hard.
Yeah.
And, you
definitely.
Know, so I always built my own dock, or Yvonne built a dock for himself and me.
All the time. All right, he brings his boxes, his planks,
exactly.
And like, I want to start from up here.
But we also did, when I was with Sarah in Sicily, Sarah came with a big palette and we carried it on the dock. And then I said, I need a second one. So we went and looked for a second one and we had to screw it on. And now in Atlanta, I didn't know about the height of the dock, and it was a custom-made dock just for the competition, but it was really low. And then I found a stepper, you know, from the workout stepper.
Yeah.
Like these things.
And you can adjust them.
And you can adjust also the height. And I carried it. And a lot of people tried it as well. You know, they like to do it. But I think at the end, I was the only one using it. Without that, I wouldn't have been able to start. So flying to Atlanta and not being able to be in the competition would have been a pity.
That definitely. You know what? We're gonna talk about like the SFT.
Yep.
But let's just end your gear story. What are you using now, and how do you like it?
Well, since last weekend, I'm the proud owner of Fireball 1250 Axis. I still have my old 1201, which I also tried again in the last days. I still have my Cloud9, which I used with a, I didn't bring it. I want to bring it with a very, very little Ketos knife.
Ah, yeah, I have it as well, the 50.
Square centimeters.
Yeah, so cool.
It's half the size of the 25 skinny from Axis. Yeah. So it feels a bit like stabless pumping, but it's better. It's easier.
I think it depends. Sorry to interject, but if you have a bigger foil, a bigger stab, and then you use it, yes, it feels like stabless. But when you go stabless and you add it back on, then it feels like something.
Yeah.
So it really depends what you compare it to. And it's super cool for training.
Yeah.
Totally agree.
Yeah.
But if I go for like a wake thieving,
yeah,
I'm not going to put it because I'm not that like competent with it yet. Mm.
Yeah,
but for training, it's a super good training stab. Yeah.
So I have some gear now to compare, and I received with my board. I received the Ketos setup, but I didn't unpack it yet, so I don't know what it is, and I didn't test it yet.
Also, with the board, you have also like Ketos foils.
They sent me a foil and the mast. So
you don't know which one yet.
I had 15 minutes today and just to unpack it.
That's exciting. They have like a super strong mast, a new mast.
Yes.
They have like the Kobun, I think, is super glidey.
Yes.
Oh, that's exciting. Yes. So you're going to pump tomorrow?
I will see. Yes, I hope.
Maybe a night session tonight. All right, that is super exciting.
Yeah, so that's about, I mean, there's a lot of new gear coming out on the market. I think lots of brands have new stuff. And I think I always tell the people, you have to choose the one that appeals best to you. You have to love it. It's your partner. It's your partner in crime. It's your partner in hopeless
failure
situations. Yeah. You have to trust it. You have to want to jump on it. It's like like a person you want to embrace. And if you don't feel with your equipment like that, I don't think you can go into the dance on it, on the water and enjoy it.
Yes, I agree. It's a dance. And also, but you know, people or the brands coming out with new things all the time, but it's also a bit exhausting because like every other month there's a new foil.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if they get better all the time. I think they get different a little bit, and that's exciting for me at least. Mm. But then, when I didn't use the old thing for quite a while, going back, it's also like a novelty again, and they're also good. So like changing, always the newest thing is not always the best thing.
Yeah.
But maybe the change thing,
I think
that
there
helps.
Is a thing of the urge of earning money with this is something. So you make the people buy new stuff all the time. The other thing is really developing. So driving the development further in this field and experiencing new stuff or experimenting with new stuff. And I would like, this is my wish to the brands and to the designers, I think usability should be a much bigger topic. Also when it comes to make it more accessible and address new customers like women. There is a big fear, not only of women and kids. Kids usually don't have fears, but so it's the parents that fear for them. And I'm a mother of three, so I fear for my kids as well. So I didn't want to let them jump on in the beginning. And I just cut myself by carrying a mast.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't say which brand because it could happen with a lot of.
Sure.
I don't want to, but that's not good, I think. Even if it makes the stiffness and it doesn't help. It doesn't help the sport, I think, at the end. Maybe for some athletes, super specific athletes that need this thing, but for the mainstream and to give access to the sport for new people, I think it should be less scary.
Yeah, totally
less
agree.
Scary, easier to mount. If you take half an hour to mount it and to screw it together, and then you need special screws that you don't get in any shop. And these are the things, you know, and protection is missing or something, so you have to come up with this with wrapping of yourself. This is something really, I think, it's important. Usability is now the next step, I think. And I had with Bake Thief, I had a very, and Todd, who designed the Better Foil, we came up with the idea of doing a competition in which setup can be screwed together
the fastest. Have you tried the slingshot?
Can we do a challenge like that?
We're here at Surfside. It's like a surf shop near Lucerne, and they have slingshot. Have you used there? Because they have like this foil that you can just like plug in. They have a latch that you can put. They have no screws. Yeah. Have you tried that?
No, but this sounds like something going in that direction. I think if we start experimenting with that, I think we, especially in Zurich, we have the lunch pumping crew, and you have 1 hour. Me also, I go sometimes for 15 minutes, I go to the lake. I mean, I take the whole gear, I don't even unscrew it.
Yeah, that's good.
But if you have short time, and we all have short time, especially women have short time, and so it should be quick to have it ready.
Yeah.
So this is really the thing, and I think there is a lot of development possibility as well, and not only in the speed and in turniness
and
performance. So not only high end. I think the
also longevity is something.
Yes, exactly.
Like, I give my stuff to friends to use, and I have two boards broken at the moment. One is fixed, but he jumped on it and then it like flew off and with the nose hit the corner of the like concrete step there, and it just like kind of split. Yeah. So you had to bring it in to repair. I don't think any brand would have been safe with that. It just was bad timing. But still, that's also something.
Yeah, I think, you know, it doesn't only change the design and how things are produced. It's also, it might change the business models because it's not producing more and more and more. It's producing for sustainability. And so business model might be relying on more rental systems.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about coming from the performing arts, it's instruments, you know, we're using still instruments from the 15th century.
That's so amazing.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
And the instruments grow with your age or with your ability. Do they get better with wine?
Yes. Like instruments?
Oh, yes.
The fuzz won't, though.
So maybe we can change that. But it's, you know, this is just to change the thinking. I mean, there is a lot of ways we can think from a different perspective, I think. And that's something I'd like to bring in as well, because I have these experiences from completely different backgrounds, not from the sportive background only. And
I really think it's cool, because tomorrow I'm going to build a foil with Sam Gahens from Onyx. Mm-hmm. And he's also going to talk about repairing foils. Yes. And I have my scratched up foils with me, and I want to ask him. Mm-hmm. But he, with his foils, does refurbishing. Mm-hmm. And I think that's super important, because all my foils are scratched.
Yeah.
I mean, I want to get into like beach starting again, but I'm scared, really, because that's going to destroy the foil 100%.
Okay.
Something like that would be super important. I don't know, we can ask later on if the shop here does repairs as well. Usually they don't.
Yeah, that we could do repair meetings. You know, we did bicycle repair meetings in the old days, I think, when we were younger. So we could do foil repair meetings, and we learn from each other, and we use, you know, not everyone has to buy all the stuff, I think. So that would be a good idea. Also, I don't know what happens with the foil you don't use anymore, or you cannot sell it because it's too old, no one wants it. What do you do with it? I mean, you have a piece of carbon, which is quite high quality. So there is the recycling path is not clear to me yet.
But you know, what I think, like the beginner foils, the foils that you started with, they're still usable for beginners. Like doing your first couple of jumps on these low aspect, heavier foils, that's still the way to go, I think.
Well, of course we can use them until they're completely done.
Also for rentals.
We can also use new gear and have easier access.
But the older ones, aren't they less sharp? Like when I look, when I
Well, they are with the time, I would say. I don't know. I mean, the material is quite heavy, so it also, when you fall on it, it's not slipping away easily. So you really fall on it and hit yourself. So it's both sides, you know, it has these different aspects. But so I mean, there's a lot of things we can still develop in the industry.
All right, good.
I think.
Good. All right, we're going to take a 5-minute break for our sponsor.
Okay.
You're gonna also get some refreshing after break. We're gonna we're gonna answer the questions that people asked us on Instagram, and then we're gonna get really into the topic on how to get more women into foiling.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, how to make it a more inclusive sport, I would say.
Yes, yes. All right, 5 minutes break. See you later. Okay. All right, we're back from our break. Thank you to our sponsor. Just kidding, we don't have a sponsor yet. But if you think about sponsoring us, if you like the show, there's a Patreon. If you're an individual, if you're a brand and you think about sponsoring us, hit us up on foil.com. That's enough commercial for today.
I want to sponsor as well.
Yeah, that would be super cool. I actually have one. No, I don't have one, but I get these cool bicycle caps from the Gelateria di Berna, and I really like them. So,
okay.
Thanks, guys. Anyway, we wanted to talk about the, or we wanted to answer questions people had on the Instagram. And we have Kitesurf Aaron. He just started last week. And now he bought a used foil, and he very much enjoys it. And he wanted to ask, how long did it take you to learn pump foiling? And it's always the question, well, when are you a pump foiler? Is it the minute? Is it a few pumps? Is it going back to the dock? How would you define that?
I mean, I can tell you, I said the beginning was really, really tough and long. So I did my first 10 seconds almost a year after I had done my first jump.
Okay.
And I did my minute 21 months after I had done my first jump. So that was a really, really long journey, I have to say. But there is people who are struggling even longer. And this is not only women, it's also men. I met people. And so this is, I think, like I said, it can be age, it can be the muscular structure, it can be a lot of the mindset. Mm-hmm. I think I discovered I have a lot of fears. And I still meet them. Sometimes I go to the dock and I have the feeling I cannot jump. This is something so deep inside me. So I face these fears and I try to get over it, to learn not to listen to the fear, because I know now I can do it.
Yeah.
And so this is really a mindset training. And some people have it more or less. And then also self-doubt. Self-doubt is something, the moment you doubt about yourself, you're in the water.
If you think that you're going to fall when you jump, you shouldn't even jump.
So this is I when I go to the dock, I stand there. The thing I tell myself, lady, you can do it. You show it now to yourself that you can do it. Just do it. This is my mantra, and just do it, and not do it right or do it whatever. Just do it, and you can do it.
All right.
And this is my constant mantra. And this is, I think, I learned also. I brought it into the rest of my life. It helps me a lot.
Definitely.
And but so the people who have more of the fears and more self-doubts and have a lot of trouble, stress, a stressful day, you know, a lot of kids like me, that can also to get out of that and to get focused, you know, it takes quite a while. And so this also takes time.
Yeah, if you have kids in the background and they ask you something while you want to start, that's like the worst. Well, not just kids, anyone.
It's the dogs barking.
It can be any. It's like, sometimes it's like golf. You want people to just shut up and then you start.
Yeah.
So you say 21 months. I think that's even more impressive than if you would have had it in 2 months, because it needs so much determination. And that's impressive.
Yeah, I think what helped me was really the people who believed I could do it. And who motivated me, and I wanted to do it. This is something really I wanted to do it. And of course, this was really something I believed in myself. I said I was a dancer. I have done pirouettes. I have also I was doing gymnastics. I was on this, how do you say, the Schwebebalken. I don't know. So I did stuff on that, and I felt like, okay, I've done things that are maybe much more difficult than bending your knees. and falling into the water. So I really wanted to get the feeling. I mean, the first time you glide, the first time you feel a glide, and even the jumps were so joyful.
It's addictive.
I learned, and did the learning journey by itself, and I felt like, okay, if I never happen to pump, I learned so much, I just go on.
All right. Then we have probably Luke from the Foil Life podcast. Mm-hmm. He asked how many hours. It's probably hard to, like, or did you write down?
I did in the beginning. In the beginning, I started a diary because I wanted to write a book, Pump Foiling for Dummies. I still have it in my head, and maybe I write this once. You know, this series, Pump...
It's got to be online. You have to hurry up now.
Yeah, yeah. But it's okay. If someone else writes it for me, it's fine. I gave the idea.
All right, good. Make sure to quote her.
And I wrote down, I did that many attempts in that hour, and I learned that and that. And so I did that in the beginning, and I lost the file. No, I will find it somewhere. But I think I went a lot. I think I went like two to three times a week for between half an hour and 2 hours. I think in the beginning. And then, of course, I had to do breaks because I was on holiday with kids. I had to do work. I had, you know, there was always, and I had to also recover from all my injuries, from my inflammations. And so I have had some stops of a couple of weeks as well in this time, weeks and months. But in total, 20 months. And hours now I cannot tell anymore. But it's definitely been more than 1,000 tries. Until my minute, and maybe even more than 1,000 tries until my 10 seconds.
All right. Well, as I said, I think it's even more impressive. We have Testy77 who asked, why is she wearing a dress? Why are you wearing a dress? I mean, it looks cool, and you're super recognizable from the dog, which is great.
Well, there's two reasons. First of all, I felt neoprenes, they don't feel good. They don't give you a good body feeling. You feel like a sausage and you feel claustrophobic, and it doesn't help me with the movement. So I felt, yes, a dress would help to make lightness. And when I was a dancer, I never trained in skirts. A lot of people do that in dance. I never did that. I never trained in skirts. And of course, I had a tutu or I had dresses when I was on stage, but not in training. But on the thing, I felt like, oh, I want to try this, because this is, and I feel it. When the skirt gets some movement, it helps you. It's you get less hectic, you get in a rhythm.
I should try it then.
Yes, you should try it. Yes. We had, I brought skirts, and everyone tried it in the beginning when I brought this stuff. The other thing is, of course, I don't like the black. Okay, now I wear a black dress very often. But the skirts I have in blue, and I don't like the black neoprenes all the time. It's so sad.
One. But the good thing, if you have a black one, it gets less dirty or it doesn't show that much. Because I have a gray one, and always if I like go back on the dock and I like touch it with the wetsuit, it's this green, muddy. Yeah. So the black makes kind of sense.
Yeah. Oh, and I think there's a third reason, which is... Now, we have this discussion a lot, you know, how much do you show your body? You know, do you pump in a bikini or in a bathsuit or covered? And I feel, you know, you're watched when you're on the lake in the middle of a city, and like it is in Zurich. Yeah. So you're going on a stage, and I wanted the people to look my sport and not my body.
Okay.
And I felt like I don't want to go out there in a bikini or in a bathing suit. Yeah. So that was also to be a bit more dressed.
Okay.
This is, also for competitions last weekend. You know, it was really, really hot, but I took the dress and the skirt.
But it wasn't that hot. I was cold with the
That's this true. Little, it's with true. This yeah, light. Yeah, yeah. Because I got we had cold. Yeah, yeah. It was a bit.
It seemed hot at first, but as soon as it went in the water and it started.
But I would never go with a bikini. This is for me. I know it's tricky. But some people like I like a skirt for the rhythm, maybe others like the bikini for the rhythm.
Well, I don't like a bikini, but I don't like the wetsuit either. It adds so much weight. I'm less flexible, and I lose so much of my time on foil when wearing a wetsuit. Like coming back from like winter and spring back in my bathing suit, it's so much more relaxed and I could go for a lot longer when I'm not in the wetsuit.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's really cool. Yeah. So, all right, then we have Joe Bertongini, probably.
Hi, Joe.
and she asks, what is the best advice you can give to someone who starts the journey?
Believe in yourself. Believe in yourself and have joy. Joy in every second.
You better have joy.
Yeah, if you can't have joy, maybe you should choose another sport.
Okay.
I think, yeah.
Because the first few hours, maybe, are not that joyful. It's, of course, it can be fun, but you hit, I mean, at least myself, when I jumped on it and I fall, I like make this big jump and fall on my back and it's all red and...
Yeah. Yeah, you didn't do a warm-up.
Well, that's true, but I would have fallen anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, but the falling is also, for me, it's just the fact that I dared to jump.
Okay.
Is always so much joy. I'm so proud of myself that I dared to jump wherever and whenever. It still keeps on. Every time I feel like, oh, I did it. I did it again.
Good. Yeah.
This is something that gives me so much joy. And
enjoy the process as well.
Yes.
I think it's super important to feel, and that's, I think, important that you film yourself, that you see, oh, here I was a little bit better. And seeing that improvement, even if it's super small, that for myself, for my journey, that helped a lot. I seen, oh, yeah, that was better, even if it didn't feel a lot better.
Yeah, I think I rely on the feeling, but this is, of course, my body. I feel
more. Yeah, you feel, yeah, for sure, for sure.
I'm trained to feel the little muscle and the different change and the timing, and this is really
and we have
the coordination.
Laurent here has the same question that Chris has, who's here live with us. How do I get my wife to start pump foiling or pump foiling? He needs urgent help. So,
well,
that's like your main topic.
Yes, this is it's our main topic.
Definitely.
I mean, it's not mine. I mean, I'm also fine to do the sport for myself, but I think we come to that. So, Laurent, Laurent, ask your wife whether she wants to do pump foiling or whether she wants to do something else, and whatever she wants to do is right, you know. Pump foiling is not the only thing that is joyful, and some people like it more, but if she likes to do pump foiling, then yes, she should just try, and it's not harmful. She will have a lot of joy. She can listen to this podcast. Now, I tell people, put on as much protective gear as you can, as you need for your mental readiness. You know, if you're a person that is very much afraid, funny enough, I was so afraid, but I never wear a cask.
That's true.
I bought one now when I started to do the throwing stuff.
Tomahawk.
Yeah. And also have an impact vest when I do longer rides and also for competitions. But I never had this in the beginning. But okay. The neoprene, I always tell the people, put on a neoprene even if it's 40 degrees outside in summer for the first jumps. Because people don't do... I mean, I've never had any scratches or bruises, really. That were not my injuries. I have now. I have a lot from the last week. But... it's just the fact that it can happen makes you reluctant to jump. And if you protect yourself well, it makes it easier for you to let go and to try the first jump. And yeah, and be patient with your wife, you know, and she has her own learning journey. And it might be completely different from yours. And she might need completely different help also. We had this talk. Men like to talk about the gear and the explanation what the foil does physically. I wasn't interested what the foil does. I was interested what I do, and so what the body does. And this is something you have to learn to trust your body, and get your head, your brain out of the way, and allow your body to react instinctively, which will cause you to make legs like this in the beginning very often, because instinctively we make very stiff legs.
That's also to the back,
want
to do that. Yeah.
And that's normal. That's normal. Yeah. You have to do it. You have to let the body do it. It's completely normal. So don't ever say to your wife, oh, it's wrong. No, it's right. It's right. You're doing the right thing. Your body does the right thing. Trust your body. It will soften up and it will make you bring your weight more forward, and it will allow you to land softly.
I'm sure Laurent or Niels was looking for a cheat. Like, have you tried the the dock starter, like the inflatable board holder thing?
I haven't tried the from North, which is
yeah, there are different
actually,
ones
out. I've not seen anyone using it successfully. I just okay. seen people using it falling. Okay. But maybe I missed these videos. I have tried myself self-made ones, and it helped a little bit.
Yeah.
Yes, it helped me just to get how do you say, accustomed to the speed.
Yeah.
You know, to really run and jump on it and just think about the jump and not about the whole movement of pushing. Yep. So you, it's, yeah, it can help, I think.
I think so too. Not just, because I tried it. I put a video on. You probably didn't see that one. I failed a lot at the beginning as well, because I was going for the same movement that I do with dock starting regularly. Yeah. And I was too much at the front all the time. And then I came with speed. I put the weight on the back foot first.
Yeah.
To get going and then to the front.
Yeah.
The advantage there, I see, is that you're less scared of hitting either the foil mm-hmm. or the dock. Because
mm-hmm.
I was scared of hitting the dock. When I jump on, I was scared mm-hmm. of like going backwards and hitting my head on the dock. And when you have that inflatable thing or someone holding the board and going full speed, then the board is gonna, and the foil is gonna fly away and you're gonna be flying away somewhere else, but not backwards on the dock.
Yeah.
That's the big thing.
Yeah, it's also, it's true.
And that's to like take away people from being scared.
Yeah, now I can also say, that was also my fear to fall with the head on the dock. I've never seen anyone falling with the head on the dock. I've never heard about it and seen it, and I've never been close myself. So this is something I can say, I don't think it's very likely to happen.
But it's probably also because people are scared of it and actively try to avoid that.
Yeah. You do a lot of things because you have fears.
Yeah, makes sense.
And one thing also what I do is I let the people, I do usually the drop start.
Yeah.
I think it's the easiest to
the
start.
The reverse
in
drop
a way.
Start?
Well, the reverse is a bit, it's like, well, sometimes you can do it the reverse or just the front drop start. So you drop the board, you don't even push it, you just drop it. And then it glides and it waits for you.
Yeah.
You see how it's very slow and it's yourself, you with your jump, give it the push and the speed.
Yeah.
And it's not you don't give the speed to the board and then you have to jump after the board.
Except if you're...
if you're really pro, then you do that. But in the beginning, I always tell the people, just let it drop and just do it as many times. I did it about 20 times before I dared to jump the first time. And I've already been pumping, you know, I could already do some pumps and just to see what it does. And I say, it invites you. Okay. There is the moment where you want to jump on it.
And even on this great video where he put like a little sheet around the mast so he could retrieve it without going in the water. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And then we have Brute Custom Cycles. How cold can the water still be? I imagine the question is more like what was the temperature of the water, like the coldest temperature that you foiled in?
Well, the coldest temperature was definitely 5 degrees, but and the one video that went viral with more than 5 million views, it was 6 degrees and it was a sunny day.
But you were not with the wetsuit.
I was not with the wetsuit.
Wow,
but I didn't
crazy.
Go far away. There is another video of mine that I did in the beginning of the winter. The water was still 12 degrees and I did a really long round and I went quite far and the air was only 6 degrees.
Oh, wow.
So I don't know which one was the harder one. But I usually do these things at the end of my session so I can go home and have a hot shower immediately.
Right.
So this is not scary. And as I'm a winter swimmer, I'm not scared of cold water.
All right,
this
good. That's good if you train like that. And we have the last question, the CCR Lowell. So that, she probably says, like, do sub phonics. Are there other foiling disciplines like winging, sub foiling, something like that, that you are doing already or that you want to do?
Well, I did a stand-up paddle, but without a foil.
Okay.
And I found it very boring, so I used it as an island just to float. But I used it then with the wing. So that was my only ever wing experience with a stand-up paddle without foil and just with wing. And of course, I don't know whether the wind pushed the board or the wing.
Okay.
I was just going fast in one direction and never back. So I stayed with that, but you know, it's very time consuming, the training, the pump oil training. So I didn't get into winging, and I don't have a car, and I don't want to be, I don't have the time to stay a whole day away from home. Usually I have, this is something why pump oiling is so good for families. I say, or people who have kids, not only for women, also for men who have kids, because you do only little rounds and you come back quickly to the shore. So when you have a baby in a stroller, you are quickly back, well, just better than folk.
You hear it crying and do another round.
But when you have kids that are safe at the shore, that you can leave alone, they can see you, they can scream out at you, you can be in contact all the time. And it's a, yeah, it's a family feeling. That's also part of the pump foiling, is not the sport, it's also the community.
Yeah, definitely.
That it, so you do it for yourself, but you don't do it alone. I think this is an important part of it.
Yeah. And especially at the beginning, it's also entertaining for them, like seeing you fall all the time. That's also a funny thing.
Yeah. They get also fed up. They don't want to give you time to do that again.
That's true. All right. We're already way in. Mm-hmm. We talked about like the advantages for you of being a dancer that you feel a lot. So maybe we can skip that topic. Mm-hmm. We talked about Yvonne a little bit. I want to touch on your travels, like the Saraus thing. Mm-hmm. You went to Australia to pump and the SFT events, Lukat and Atlanta. What do you want to talk about?
Well, I also was pumping in Turkey and in Portugal. So
right.
I did a lot of. I take the pump for wherever I go. I like testing the gear. I also like new challenges.
But you bring it with yourself, or do you look for pumpers there and use their gear?
I brought it in Portugal and Turkey. I brought it myself. I think in Turkey I was the first one ever going there. And I didn't know whether I could start. It was really wild.
So hopefully you got the keto split at home now.
Not yet.
Because that is would be good to travel, right?
And it would be great to travel. And in Australia, I didn't take my own gear. I thought all the brands are sitting there and they would give me something. That wasn't the case, but I met nice people at the shore. And problem is, in these countries where you have a lot of waves and winds and, well, ocean, you don't have dog starters because you don't need that.
That's true.
They were interested. I found dogs and they were interested in learning it, or you know, they gave me, I just brought my board because it was an 80 centimeter board. I could fit it in my luggage, and they wouldn't have had a small board to do dog starting, but they had the foils.
Okay.
So I could, and they were really, really nice and giving me their gear. That was really nice.
All right. So then maybe the SFT, like the Lookout, how was that event for you, or Atlanta as well? I mean, you flew over for just a weekend, and there's also, and we talked about that before, like the environmental question.
Yes.
Should someone actually do that, go there for a weekend or not? And you tried an e-foil there. Maybe you can talk about that as well, because I'm interested how that was for you.
Well, my SFT journey started in the moment when I saw it happening in Düsseldorf.
Yeah.
And we had this discussion in our chat, and I was like, okay, why is there only two women on the podium? And there was this one picture that was really engraved in my head, and I said, this should never happen again. There was a podium with two women on it, and there was two men even standing on the podium. And I felt like, listen, guys, we don't need you replacing the third woman. This is,
was someone under?
It was meant just to encourage, or you know, it was no bad intention at all, but it was this picture. It's like, you know, I'm a choreographer, so taking space means something. And women have in publicity, in the public space, we don't occupy as much space as the other half of the population of this earth. You know, we are really limited in public space. In some countries we are not even allowed in public space. So this is something very deep, when I feel that there is space that is actually dedicated to women is taken away, coincidentally, you know, it was not in a bad intention. This makes something with me.
Okay.
So I saw this picture, and you remember in the chat, I asked, like, how did this happen, and why couldn't we do something against it? Mm-hmm. And you came up with, oh, there is no bad intention. And I felt like, okay, maybe there was no intention at all. And we need an intention, maybe. And then I started to think about, so how could we start this discussion? It's very difficult because, of course, organizers who do that, they do a lot of work, and I feel offended when you come with a critic point in the beginning.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and, sure. Especially if it's from a woman.
especially if the woman is maybe right.
Yeah, it's the worst.
No, it's we shouldn't laugh about it. It's really honestly, it's right, something. For me, palm falling is a metaphor of our life. You know, it's an invention. It's a new life. We design a new sport. We design a new way of being. And if half of the population is left out of it, I ask the question, why? And I didn't find the reason in the sport itself, not in the movement. It's not heavy to do it for the body. If you learn the technique, you can do it easily with anybody. You get the fitness with it.
Yeah, definitely.
So there's not the reason. Like Yvonne said, it's women might even be better because they feel the body and they dance it and they have different approaches to the learning journey as well. So when it is not in our bodies or in the body differences, why is it? And then we immediately come close to all the structures and social problems we have at the mm-hmm. moment. And I had the feeling if we can overcome this in our sport, we can really move something also in society. We can be a metaphor for a futuristic society. We can learn how we can learn new structures. We can learn new processes in designing things together, developing things together, and that will help us also outside this sport.
Okay.
It's, and at the moment, this is why I think it's necessary we make it more inclusive. It's not only women, but of course we are not a minority. We are half of the other population, and there's also a lot of men that are missing. You know, it's a certain group, certain age, basically. Young people are missing. A lot of young people are missing, a lot of with less financial power are missing.
Yeah.
So it's not very accessible for a majority of the people. And I think when we start to change this, it will help the sport and it will help us to learn how to, how we can grow together in the future. And, you know, at the moment, I got a bit shocked because it's really the rules of this game we are in are given by this certain group of men or male, mid-aged, middle-aged, financial, powerful men, and Western men, white men.
Yeah.
And so you set already the structures and the rules, and the rest has to fit in now. And this is something which is not good for any of us, I think. We should create the rules, we should create the structures together and do the designing and the testing and the developing of the material. There is also an organization, they call it change the narrative. You know, I understand that the organizations that exist now come from other sports that were male dominated as well, from the same group of people. So if we use the same, this history and build on that history, it's very difficult to create something new.
Yeah, definitely.
So this is why I say, let's change the narrative and forget about the rest and
start something new. Are we going to do that?
Exactly. This is a big question. And that's why we need each other. You cannot do it alone. We cannot do it alone. We have to be together. I think this is my urge, which I saw when I saw this picture of the SFT. And my decision was, okay, I go to as many SFT events as I can. To learn and to be present and to represent. I'm just one person and I happen to be a woman. I cannot represent all women because we are so different.
Yeah,
I probably represent a lot of men better than I represent women. I don't know. But I represent something else, which is forgotten. And I have to see, that's why I went there and I made a lot of noise. Sorry, guys, I did that. But it was also on purpose to raise a voice and to take space and show their, to ask questions, uneasy questions. Also the women. Why are so few women participating?
How many were there?
Well, different. I mean, the first international competition I was in was in Crozon Folk Festival. There were 5 women, 50 men, 5 women. I think it was the biggest ever, and it was the first ever. And then it got less and less, I think. The only thing in Sicily, we were half-half. We were 2 men, 2 women. Well, actually, almost 3 women. Almost 3 women. But the third one, she opted then out after a while. But we were actually 3 women, 2 men. And so it can change quickly. And this was so important, these moments also, to see how things change when there is when there is an even number.
How can you, because I know, or if I recall correctly, you have like a women's WhatsApp group in mm-hmm. and around Zurich. Mm-hmm. Is that something like giving a safe space? Because yes, mm-hmm. When you go to the lake, then mm-hmm. obviously it gets hot. They're in their bikini. It can be uncomfortable for some of them. Mm-hmm. So have you like this safe space, like private doc sessions, mm-hmm. something you do discuss? How can we do that? Or mm-hmm. how does that work? You want to talk about
that? Well, it's, you know, we also find out the WhatsApp group we have. It's called the Foil Sisters WhatsApp group. There's also an Instagram group. And not all women are yet on it, but and it's not only pump foiling. I created the WhatsApp group after I think I came back from Crozon as well, and it's an international group.
Yeah.
So I tried to include internationally, and we had 2 Zoom calls recently to get to know each other and to talk a little bit live. I can tell you there's not much happening in this group. And you might question whether we need this group, because it's a lot of silence. Also, the Zoom talks were not very frequented. Anyhow, I think it's very important to know that there is this space. This is something a lot of women, they ask for it, and they always say, I appreciate, I'm sorry, I'm not contributing a lot, but I'm happy that we have it.
That's cool.
And so sometimes I am a bit frustrated, because I started it off and I tried to moderate, or I tried to get a little bit of activeness. But at the same time, I respect, and I have to, and I want to respect that people don't want to be loud, they don't want to talk.
Yeah, that's a man thing as well.
They don't want to share their failures and not even their successes. They don't want to present any videos. They don't want to be present on Instagram. They want to just do the sport, enjoy it, and in case they need it, they like to exchange. And that's why, and a lot of them said, I would never exchange on the mixed group where I risk to be shouted at, which happened to me sometimes. Okay. Yeah. And I risk that, it's fine, you can do it. And but so women, they are not using it, but they know it exists, and this is important.
All right. Is there anything else in that matter that you want to address, talk to me about it, or like to the audience? Say, what could we as foilers do to encourage women, or to give them space? Maybe they don't need, or I don't know if they could say they, because they're different, obviously, but should we just like shut up about it and leave them alone, or like actively try to encourage them?
Yes.
You know what I mean?
No, I think, you know, you guys, you're so used to be alone amongst yourself in the world. This is your natural status, and sometimes you don't even realize that it's only men. And so this is something, really talking about society, I think. First of all, notice that this is not normal, that there is only men. This is not normal. This is not representing society. This is a very special thing, and it means you're highly privileged
in
many ways, that you can be in that position. And this is scary as well, because what happens if you share this with others? Do you lose your privileges? I think they grow for more people. That's what I believe. I know also there's some women, and I have been being in dance. I know, you know, this is an environment where there's a lot of women and just very few men. And we never feared the men, never. We always invited them, and the men got more money than us. They could do it. They were not better than women, much less. I mean, they could start their dance training when they were grown up already. We all started when we were 5 or 6. And they joined us when they were 16, 17. They started to dance when we were already professional educated. And they still earned more money. And that was natural for us because there are so few. So to get them, you know, it is those men in dance at that time, they had to overcome so many struggles in society to get to be a dancer. And now it's the same for women to get into male domains. Mm. We have to overcome so many struggles of society that to just get there. So this is also an explanation why there is so few. And if you imagine, I mean, the history of sports, women in sports, this is so recent.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I just listened to the podcast about like football, soccer. Yeah. They had a super, super like three-parter about that. And yeah, it's like terrible. Like 50 years ago, yeah, it was no-go. They weren't even allowed licenses. Yeah. So it's,
Yeah, and the thing is, like I said before, the rules of all the sports were made
by men,
by
for
men.
Men.
Yeah. By men, by a special group of men. We always have to think about that as well. It's a special group of men. It's not all men.
Because I always thought concerning pump foiling, it's just, I mean, as I said, I think it looks stupid and the start is even stupider, even more stupid because you fall so much. And I just, because I have my wife to compare it to at the moment and she doesn't want to start because she saw me failing so many times. Like, I don't want to get into that. It looks stupid and it's exhausting. And if I could do it, yes, but the struggle seems so big. She's not into that.
Yeah.
So that's what I thought is why I think, or at least for myself, I don't care if I look stupid. I look stupid anyway, so why not do it on a pump foil?
You don't look stupid.
Well, it depends who you ask. No, but you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I don't care how
I know,
look at me.
I know we are also, women have to be perfect. They have to be perfect looking. They have to, when they open their mouths, they have to formulate a perfect sentence. Otherwise, they better shut up and hide themselves. Mm. This is something I know a lot about that. And then at the same time, if you're intelligent, you don't show that either because other people will be afraid of you. And so this is a lot of things, you know, how should women behave? And this is all the perfectionism to hiding your strengths. If you're a strong woman, oh God, you better hide that.
Okay.
And this is something, there was this sentence that resonated a lot of me from a discussion yesterday. A man is a man because he's pump foiling. A woman is a woman despite the fact she's pump foiling.
Okay.
And there is something very true in that. And so this is the thing we have to overcome. It has to become natural that a woman is a pump foiler.
Definitely.
And a woman is a woman because she's pump foiling.
All right. Yeah. I think that's a perfect place to like leave it at that and have that sink in. What do you think?
Yeah.
Is that okay with you? We're way over an hour and we could go on forever. I think, is there something that you want to address, like you said, like I need to tell listeners something, or do you think we can wrap it up later on?
I have one thing. It's a question, because I said I like asking
good
an easy question. There is the topic of competitions. Do we really need competitions today? People fighting for being faster or longer on the foil? Is this really the dimension we want to compare each other and what we want to fight for? Isn't there more interesting things we could show and experiment with? So this is the format of a competition. I know there's a lot of, this is the old history of sports. I think it's not only about pump foil, it's about all the sports. Mm-hmm. There is, for example, in yoga, there is no, maybe there is competitions as well, but they are not important.
Probably.
Yoga is a sport that I think everyone does now. This is very open and you don't need competitions, you know, to make it a spectacle, to make it a show. And maybe it could be, you know, completely different things and not being better than the other, maybe also being other than the other could be a topic. And so this is, I want to give this in really to rethink something from upside down and change the narrative and dare to invent the world anew, I think, and together, all together.
Nice. That was more a question for everyone to think about. Good.
Yes.
Good. Because last weekend, where there was a competition. Matteo, he would have won the freestyle competition probably. He opted out. He went for wake thieving for the whole day because he enjoyed it more. And I thought that's so cool. He's 14 and already have like a mindset. He doesn't care about competition. He's gonna enjoy himself. That was so cool.
Yeah, I really admire him as well for that. This is
really cool.
Yeah, and I think it's worth. We can stop here now.
All right, good. Well,
continue discussion.
Then firstly, thank you very much for coming on
the
show.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for us being able to be here. It was really cool having drinks, having a few snacks. Thank you guys. Do you have any questions you want to ask Catherine, or did you address enough?
Too long.
All right, if not, we can do that later on. All that's left for me is to tell you who the next guest is going to be. The next guest is going to be Daniela Moroz. She's a 6 times Formula Kite World Champion, 4 times US Rolex Yachts Woman of the Year. She was an Olympian kite foiling, and you've probably seen her. She has awesome videos on Instagram where she roasts foilers. Like, if you use Armstrong foils, then you're probably blah, 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 and you roast. And she had like 2 parties already. She's going to continue. It's so much fun. So she's going to be next. Looking forward to that. Thank you much again. Okay. Thanks for all the listeners, the viewers who are alive. Thank you much for being on, and see you guys in the next one.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.